You're listening to the Patriots All 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Adam Kirkchen.
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
Week two of the NFL season is upon us, and the Patriots will head down to Jacksonville in the middle of a hurricane, it sounds like, in a couple of days here and get ready for the Jaguars. But before we get there, Adam Kirkchen, we wanted to talk about some big picture things for the Patriots that are on our minds. And I think that the running back position right now, with the concussion for Rex Burkhead and Sony Michel still coming back from a knee injury, and obviously Jeremy Hill now out for the season, has kind of supplanted the wide receiver position for the new thinnest position on the Patriots roster.
Yeah, I think the thing is like, I think it's a big deal. I mean, like, people really do underestimate the facet of their offense when they get under center and put James Devlin behind Brady and run the ball power and sort of like a lot of those formations and the how they can set up play action with that. That's a facet of their offense that some people just don't really respect as much.
Yeah.
As when they spread things out and go up tempo and all that sort of thing. So it is a loss. However, like we were talking about last night on the phone, this is one of those things where you're glad you have somebody like Josh McDaniels, because, you know, if you're going to look at one of the main characteristic when you're talking about a guy like that, he's creative. Okay. Like, you know, you go back to the Houston game from a couple years ago where they just trotted out this whole crazy offense against the Texans, and with Jacoby Brissett, and you know, it's not going to be like that, but you don't have like the traditional between the tackles successful runner that you'd have elsewhere. So you're going to need to dress it up a little bit more in other places. So, you know, McDaniels is your guy for that. You know, like, I know a lot of fans get frustrated because they think Josh is a little too fancy schmancy when he doesn't need to be, but this is the type of situation that plays right into his hands. Okay. You can throw a lot more different sets. You know, you just get creative, and you can use different players in the running game or passing game, however you want. So it's one of those deals where it's a challenge, but they like challenges. This coaching staff likes challenges, and I know that Josh definitely likes challenges, and he kind of, you know, like, plays with his pretend mustache every time he has to do something a little different. You know, he gets in the chemistry lab and stuff. So I don't think this is a death knell. You know, I don't think this is one of those things where, okay, oh, you hit the panic button. It is something they have to overcome, and I think they have the type of coaching staff where they can do it.
Yeah, I think that one thing about McDaniels, when you just ask people in the locker room about him, is that he is as good as any coach in the league at, you know, taking advantage of what players are good at and kind of letting them play to their strengths and then putting them in positions to succeed. You know, guy like Philip Dorsett, who obviously didn't have a great year one with the Patriots, has now really developed into a nice component for the Pats, because Josh McDaniels has been able to kind of find ways to get him open and find ways that he can succeed. I think that he's a perfect example of this. And, you know, kind of turning back the clocks here with no between the tackles back, and maybe, you know, the passing game, the short passing game, like it has been in New England for a very long time, kind of becomes an extension of that running game. I think the biggest problem I see with the running backs is twofold. One, they don't really have anybody, even when Rex Burkhead is healthy, that can create their own yards like Deion Lewis used to, a guy that can make guys miss in the hole and be elusive and create missed tackles and stuff like that if Sony Michel is not healthy. You know, that's the guy that they're hoping that Sony Michel can become. And the other thing is what you said was that, you know, I was speaking to David Andrews today about the play action passing game, and he said, you know, you do have to have a semblance of a running game to have that work. You know, it's the, you can't just have zero running game and have it non-existent and still be able to run those play action passes. The play action passing game is a huge part of what makes the Patriots great, because Tom Brady is so good at not only doing the fakes, but also kind of processing things quickly and being able to get the ball out to whoever is open off of those types of actions. So I think it's a big thing to not have that between the tackles running back, because it also hurts you in the play action passing game as well. So I think that all in all, what it really says, and we've, you and I have been toting Sony Michel for, you know, and since they drafted the guy, really. So it's not, you know, any surprise to us. And, yeah. Yeah, so it's not going to be any surprise to us that he's going to be a really good player, but they need a healthy Sony Michel, I think, now almost more than ever, because without Jeremy Hill and with Burkhead and James White against Houston, it just wasn't good enough on the ground in terms of what the running backs could bring to the ground game. Sure, Burkhead might be a type of guy that can turn out 4 yards a carry and kind of get what's blocked and be a little bit versatile as a receiver and a runner, but he's not a guy that is going to create yards on his own on a regular basis.
Yeah, it's one of those deals too, where, I mean, I tweeted about it after the game. It just felt like a weird game against Houston. There's a lot of, like, and we were talking about this last night on the phone too, where the Houston game in a lot of ways felt like a fifth preseason game, exhibition game, or whatever you want to call it. Like, it just felt weird. Like, there's a lot of choppiness and sort of sloppy things, and all the pieces didn't fit yet. And that's like a lot of early season Patriots games. And when you lose that real component of your offense, like, they're going to, you know, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do in terms of, you know, sort of under center eye formation plays. I don't know if they're going to ditch it completely or for this game or what. I don't know what they're going to do. But when you have that type of disruption, even especially this early in the season, you're good, and especially going up against a defense like Jacksonville's, it's not going to look flawless again. So if Patriots fans just sort of go into that this game, that there's going to be like it is again not going to be a masterpiece out there. You're going to see some real clunkiness, and you know, I mean, I'd be shocked. I mean, like, you know, of course anything can happen. Now watch, they'll score 45 points, but I mean, all the signs point towards another really, like, difficult, you know, and a lot at times difficult to watch football, but you know, they still have a lot of things going for them.
It is interesting element to this game that the Jaguars seem to be taking it very seriously and almost like this is a playoff game. Whereas with the Patriots, we know in the past, and even in week one, like we've been talking about, this is kind of, September is kind of an extension of the preseason nowadays, where they're kind of still working out kinks and kind of figuring out what they have and, you know, going forward. And they're not really kind of dialing up or revealing too much that maybe some of the things that they're going to do in December, January, as the games really start to matter, obviously, in the playoffs. You know, Josh McDaniels is going to save some bullets in that gun for when, if this is another matchup that they have in the AFC Championship game or something like that down the road. Jacksonville, I do not think, is going to get the full complement of what the Patriots are capable of in this game. But it's interesting to see, because Jacksonville is one of those defenses that if you just drop back and pass in a traditional, you know, three wide receiver set, 11 personnel, that type of stuff, and you try to attack them just kind of in a conventional way, they will own you. It is just not going to work. That the statistics for them when they go up against 11 personnel, three wide receiver, one tight end, one running back, is just, it's daunting how good they are against those types of things. But when you go heavy, when you put a fullback in the game, when you put an extra tight end in the game, when you run play action, those are the types of things, those little wrinkles, those things that don't happen on every down necessarily. You know, maybe you only run play action like they did in the AFC Championship game last year about 17% of the time, but Tom Brady has 10 yards per attempt, you know, off of those play action passes, and that's kind of where they get a lot of their chunk plays. So this is a team in Jacksonville. They obviously line up and they play their defense, and they're not going to game plan too much, but they're so good at playing their defense that if you just kind of line up and put Tom Brady in the shotgun, you put a couple of receivers around him and you run a conventional offense, it's going to be a long day.
Yeah. And like I was saying earlier, like, when you watch the NFL in person, like everybody looks good.
Yeah.
Then like when you see a defense like Jacksonville's and they're like that much faster than everybody else, you got like a guy like Miles Jack, like he doesn't get as much talked about as a guy like Ramsey, because Ramsey's got such a big mouth, but like Jack, dude, Jack is insanely good.
Yeah.
Like, Miles Jack, like, I mean, you talk about a coverage linebacker who can also, like, you know, who can just do it all. I mean, he's a stud, man. So, like, they're one of those defenses, one of those rare defenses that can sort of defend the whole playbook as well as anything. Like, I feel like, you know, I feel like they can stop the run. I feel like they're good at when you spread them out. I think they have star power at every single level of the defense. So, you know, if this was a fully healthy Jacksonville team, if they had Fournette, if they had Lee, you know, and if they had like a more reliable quarterback than Blake Bortles, who, you know, obviously has made steps, but like he's not there, you know, I don't think he'll ever be like the guy. You know, I think you're looking at a different game, but as it is, you know, this defense, it's fun to watch no matter who you're rooting for, to see this type of talent sort of come together on a defense like Jacksonville's.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they just have players on all three levels of that defense that are, I mean, they have 6 Pro Bowlers out of 11 starters. I mean, you're talking about some serious talent. But I think that the Blake Bortles thing is really the most interesting thing. We're going to get into more of this with Andrew Callahan, our guest, in a few minutes. But I think the Blake Bortles thing is the most interesting thing, because last year, with Nathaniel Hackett as their offensive coordinator, he's still the coordinator there, he was just really great at the smoke and mirrors. You know, he's going to run these options, he's going to run these bootleg play actions, he's going to move Bortles, he's going to, you know, make the windows, the passing lanes bigger. He's going to give him those easy dump offs into the flat on the screen passes and things like that to the tight ends and the fullbacks and the running backs. So I think that kind of smoke and mirrors offense, a lot of misdirection, a lot of those types of things. I wonder if that is sustainable throughout, you know, multiple seasons. Obviously, the Jaguars, believe it or not, I know a lot of this had to do with the turnovers that the defense created, but they were 5th in the league in points per game last year. They averaged almost 26 points a game. So I just wonder if, you know, that is a sustainable thing. But we'll get more into that with Andrew Callahan from Mass Live. He is next with our interview with Andrew.
We are joined now by Andrew Callahan of Mass Live. Go follow Andrew on Twitter @_ Andrew Callahan, correct? Okay, there we go. Round 2 of this, we're going to try again. last night we tried and the audio didn't work out, but this time around, Andrew, thanks for sticking in with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's get right into it and let's start with the Patriots pass rush last week was kind of the bright spot of the game, I would say, in terms of rushing Deshaun Watson. And I think that everybody is kind of wondering, once the competition ramps up here and the offensive lines that go up against are a little bit better than Houston's, do we think that they can keep it going? And Andrew, do you think that this pass rush is here to stay, or do you think that was Houston's offensive line kind of being terrible?
Yeah, it's obviously a mix of both. To me, I think the pressure rate that you saw against Houston, which reigned depending on who you know look to for your source for there, 45% to 55%, that's not going to be sustainable. But when you look at how the Patriots got pressure on Deshaun Watson, I think that will carry over. It's going to predominantly be a 4-man rush, and that's due to 2 primary reasons. Their depth and diversity up front is much better in their pass rush. And that's, you know, you can go against a variety of different offensive lines that might play power better than speed or defend speed to power. Well, the Patriots have different answers for that. I mean, Derek Rivers with a healthy scratch. So when you bring him in, you know, they just go about 7-8 deep across the line. I think that helps them this season. So, you know, I would expect the pressure to be better, you know, in different games, because I think they'll blitz a little bit more, probably starting with Jacksonville this week. But overall, you know, that the pass rush will be better. 40% to 50% pressure rate, though, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. Derek Rivers, a healthy scratch. I wanted to ask Belichick about that, but didn't have the chance. But really, I mean, last year, Adam, if we would have told you that a guy like Derek Rivers would have been a healthy scratch when they had were throwing guys like Eric Lee and some of those other practice squatters out there on the pass rush, we would not have believed you.
Yeah, that's the one thing that's kind of crazy about this whole thing is Rivers not playing and then playing that well and just sort of taking over. It was just a dominant performance, and, you know, the Texans don't have a good offensive line. You know, I think everybody knows that. But when you go up against a line like that and you play like that, that's what you're looking for. You know, I mean, and so, you know, like you were saying, Andrew, I think you can't go into every game expecting that type of performance, but you can expect, you know, this pass rush to be better than last year, based on what we saw. I think that's a fair thing to expect. I think, you know, going forward, you know, with the depth they have, the guys on the inside, the guys on the outside, you know, they have guys that can be fresh, you know, throughout the fourth quarter with their depth. And I think this is something you can point to if you're a Patriots fan and be positive about and be optimistic about, you know, what they have going forward. I think, you know, the type of players they have, they're not just good players, but they're guys that are coming into their own. Guys like Wise, he's growing into a very good pass rusher right now, and he already was, but I think he's starting to take the next step.
Yeah, the intriguing thing is that they did it without really blitzing that much, yep. Rushing a lot of four-man rushes, and they were still able to push the pocket and get inside. But let's flip it over now to the other side of the ball, which I think is probably the matchup of this game. Again, it feels like last week it was the matchup of the game. It's again the matchup of the game this week, and that's the Patriots' offensive line against the Jaguars' defensive front, which I think is probably more loaded in some respects than what we saw with Houston last week. So they have their hands full again this weekend.
Yeah, I think so. It's very different. You know, Houston's a game plan defense. Jacksonville's going to do what they do in kind of that, you know, I don't want to say simple, but kind of cover three base scheme where, you know, what they're in, they're fine with that because they're going to cover and rush you anyway. So the front four is balanced, whether you look at them from a speed versus power standpoint, youth and experience. They'll move their alignments here and there and obviously show pressure with their linebackers occasionally. But how that front four does damage against Brady or doesn't really should decide this game. And that's an easy thing to say. But ultimately, Brady's going to need time given the lack of weapons will have available. Rex Burkhead might be out. And for me, I think the Patriots handle power better than they do speed. So in that instance, you feel good, you know, if you're a member of the staff or the team or a fan. But overall, I mean, Yannick Ngakoue against Trent Brown is going to be perhaps the most interesting.
Heavyweight
battle, but also just his speed is different than what you see from some of the other guys. So, you know, they're going to have their hands full. I wouldn't expect Jacksonville to rush a whole lot. But it's a group that's going to test you snap after snap. And they fouled two sacks last year in the AFC Championship game. So you've got to block them across the board.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I just think I agree across the board on that. I think Ngakoue is just such an impressive guy. You know, this is going back to when we saw him in the preseason last year, when they came to Gillette, you know, not even the AFC Championship game, but just how fast both he and the entire Jacksonville defense was, and how it just sort of jumped out at everybody. So I think it'll be a huge test. You know, I'm not sure how it's going to go down, you know, for the total of four quarters, but when you look at Jacksonville, I just love their whole defense. I think it's fast, it's physical, it's just something that covers the whole field. I think this matchup with Trent Brown is going to be big. I don't expect it to be something that one or the other guy dominates the whole way. But it is going to be, you know, like you guys said, like a heavyweight match. So, I think this is Trent Brown's, you know, just sort of like one of his, you know, biggest tests all year. We'll see, but, I think, you know, I'm looking forward to just seeing Jacksonville's defense. I know it's sort of a weird way to put it, but like, I love watching this defense play.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that all three levels of this defense has talent players, six Pro Bowlers. I think the interior of the Patriots offensive line versus Malik Jackson, probably a little bit of Calais Campbell. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a really interesting matchup as well. I mean, I think a lot of eyes will be on Trent Brown versus Yannick, but I think that in order for the Patriots to kind of get away from Yannick, they're going to have Tom Brady step up in the pocket, and you know that he likes to do that anyways, and kind of use that interior of the offensive line to, you know, navigate rushers and do that type of stuff. So I think that there is going to be a pretty good pass rush from guys like Malik Jackson and Calais Campbell and even Marcel Darius that the Patriots are going to have to deal with. And it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, they are able to do with those three guys in the interior, usually a four-man line for the Jaguars, which means they don't really have a true nose. So David Andrews is kind of going to be roaming a lot. So he's going to have to help out a lot, I think, with Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney against some of those interior guys. All right, let's talk about the matchup of the week for everybody else, and that is Jalen Ramsey versus Rob Gronkowski. Obviously, a lot of trash talk going back and forth between those two, more on the Ramsey side of things. But in general, Andrew, do you think that we're going to see them matched up a lot, or do you think that this is more talk than it is, you know, going to end up being in the game?
Yeah, this is way overblown. I think when you take this back to the source of all this hype and this discussion, the origins of this, you know, quote-unquote trash talk is just Jalen Ramsey, amid a ton of scathing scouting reports of half the NFL, just said Gronk is not as good as people think he is. And you know what? From a guy like Ramsey, who obviously backs it up with his play, that doesn't mean a whole lot, because he could have said a whole lot worse. So for me, you'll only see Gronkowski against Ramsey typically when he split out wide, when they'll go 3-by-1, Gronkowski being the single side, it kind of ex-ISO plays, and then they might go at it, or it might be a run play, or maybe it's just a distraction, because we saw how New England was able to manipulate Houston, particularly in the red zone, with Gronkowski's alignment, understanding he's going to be doubled, and then throw to one-on-ones on the opposite side. So for me, you know, I would expect Gronk to be targeted a few times against Ramsey. You're always going to trust him. But I think, you know, in terms of what was actually said and all the conversation that we've had, it's just a lot more hot air than anything else.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, like we were saying about, you know, maybe when Gronk is split out wide and you see them go after each other that way. But it's not something that you can expect to see like in a matchup, like every down, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, you can see them, you know, matched up a few times, but we're not sure exactly how Jacksonville's going to play Gronkowski. So it'll be fun to see them go up against each other when, you know, like we said, like when Gronkowski split out wide and stuff like that. But it's a facet of the game. It's not a huge facet of the game. And like you were saying, Andrew, it's not something that's going to decide the game one way or the other. It's just one part, but it is kind of fun. I think it is kind of fun sometimes to see this type of trash talk before the game, just to spice it up a little. And I know, Evan, we were talking the other day, it was one of those things where sometimes players feel like they need to do it to get pumped up for games. And sometimes it raises the level of intensity between a couple of players when there's a little bit of trash talk. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think Jalen Ramsey is definitely one of those players that kind of goes with this trash talking to kind of psych himself up a little bit and get himself a little bit more motivated. Not that he needs it necessarily, but he's one of those types of guys. I don't know why you would kind of pick that fight with Rob Gronkowski of all people. Not the type of guy that you need to give any extra added motivation to, but I actually think it's in the Patriots' best interest to keep Gronk away from Jalen Ramsey if possible and have him go up against some of the linebackers and safeties where he's had more success in the past. You know, Jalen Ramsey, as much as you know, there's more to it than just saying, you know, here are the raw numbers, isn't entirely wrong that Gronkowski's numbers drop right against cornerbacks. I have had my friend Louis Benjamin at Pro Football Focus pull the numbers for me, and there is a pretty significant drop off for Gronk when he goes up against corners. Now, obviously, there's a whole lot of factors that go into that. Corners are just better coverage players, first of all. Second of all, you know, a lot of those targets were further downfield because it's Gronk flexed out wide as a wide receiver instead of him going over the middle. So I think there's a lot of factors, but I think overall the Patriots would like to see it not go that direction and have it go in the direction of Gronk going up against the guys like Barry Church and Tayshaun Gibson and the people of that ilk who are not as good as Jalen Ramsey. But it'll be interesting to see how they do it to dictate coverage, because I think that they can ISO Gronk, like you said, Andrew, and have that kind of trickle down to having some good matchups in other spots for the Patriots, whether it's a guy like DJ Hayden on a Chris Hogan or even AJ Bouye, who had a lot of trouble with Brandon Cooks' speed last year. You get him matched up against Philip Dorsett. Maybe that's a matchup that can favor the Pats. All right, let's move over to the Jaguars offense against the Patriots defense for a second here and talk about the Jaguars passing game. Andrew, there's not a single player on this team in the Jaguars that really scares me all that much in the passing attack. It's not exactly filled with a bunch of great receivers, but who on the Jaguars do you think the Pats are going to have to worry about here?
You know, I think this comes down to different situations. I mean, the first and 10, second and 10, you want to avoid, obviously, those big chunk plays being generated. And D.D. Westbrook and Keelan Cole, simply by virtue of their speed, are the guys you have to watch to in that regard. But from my standpoint, Jacksonville's success will come from steady, long drives, just like you saw a year ago or back in January in the AFC title game, where they're mixing in some RPOs with, obviously, their foundational running game. And then Bortles is moving on boots and short throws and kind of single reads. And the guy who can do the most damage in that capacity for me is Austin Seferian Jenkins. You know, at 8 catches a year ago as a Jet when the Patriots went down to New Jersey and played them down there, had a touchdown, had another one called back. He had a touchdown called back last week against the Giants when Jacksonville was down in New York. So he's a guy that not only is a good matchup for Jacksonville one-on-one working against Patriots linebackers who are not terribly good in coverage, but a guy who's had success against them in the past and now will be targeted in those situations where I think they're going to look to move the ball. Do you need to double him necessarily out of the gates? I don't think so. But if he does have success, you're going to need to devote extra resources to him because, again, that's where Bortles is going to make his money, those kind of third and manageable situations looking for the tight end.
Yeah, I agree 100% with this one. Seferian Jenkins adds a receiving tight end element to this team that they didn't have last year. They had guys like Mercedes Lewis, James O'Shaughnessy blocking tight ends. Now all of a sudden they have a receiving tight end. I think we're going to see a lot of Patrick Chung matched up against Seferian Jenkins, and I think that's going to be a matchup to watch. Adam, what do you think here?
I'd have to agree because we were saying you look at their lineup and it's really hard to find right now with the guys that are out, like real tough playmakers and guys that scare you. So I think Seferian Jenkins will be tough, but I think to Andrew's point, the thing that is most important that sticks out the most is the pace of their offense and not necessarily the pace, but the what they're going to try to do, which is, you know, have those sort of plotting drives and sort of, you know, move the ball down the field, you know, methodically, because I think that serves them best going up against this Patriots offense, in addition to having their defense play well. I don't think they really have the personnel to be like a quick strike offense against this team. The Jaguars by that. You know, I think they're going to try to make easy throws for Bortles. I think they're going to try to make it high percentage stuff. I don't think they're going to go for a lot of low percentage, difficult plays for Bortles. So I think that means, you know, like a lot of play action and stuff like that. And I don't think there's any one player that really, really sticks out as somebody who scares you, but I think Seferian Jenkins is somebody that they could go to in that.
Yeah, I'll throw one more name out there just to have some diversity here. Yeah. That's Corey Grant, the running back who gashed the Patriots a lot on a lot of those package plays, those RPOs that they would run where the running back would go out for a screen or they can hand the ball off to another running back. They had that interesting wrinkle where they put Grant right behind the left tackle and kind of gave him a little bit more of an easier path to the flat. So they've gained some big chunk yardage plays, you know, 20, 25 yards a play on those types of plays. If I'm the Jaguars, and this was something a lot of people said after the AFC Championship game, is why didn't they keep running those plays? I'm just running those plays 10, 15 times in this game until the Patriots prove that they can stop it. I'm sure that the Patriots have game planned specifically for those types of package plays this time around. Maybe they weren't so ready for them the last time around. But overall, I mean, there's still the same concerns, I think, with the speed of the Patriots front seven versus the speed of a guy like a Corey Grant, who is a very fast dude, or even a Keelan Cole, if they can get him, or D.D. Westbrook on these types of plays. So I think the play-action passing game or the RPOs, whichever way it goes, are going to be a big factor in this game. And Corey Grant, I think, is going to be another one of those guys that the Patriots are going to have trouble with as a receiving running back, especially if Leonard Fournette doesn't play in this game. Right. Then yep. There's really no other option for them. I mean, T.J. Yeldon is a fine bat, but he's not somebody that the Patriots are going to be really that afraid of. So I think if Fournette is a no-go, then that might actually push their hand more to play Corey Grant and kind of pass the ball and use the short passing game as an extension of the run game, which is something that we see a lot here in New England. All right, Andrew, tell everybody what you got coming down the road here. Anything you want to preview for this weekend?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate the time. And honestly, we're pretty much wrapping up here for the week. But, you know, we'll have a big preview every single Saturday. And when I mean big, I mean as big as it kind of gets. So we cover the weather to expect, which is, of course, of note with the hurricane just arriving in the Carolinas north of Jacksonville. Point spreads, top matchups to watch, game plans for both teams about how they should go about attacking the other and how they might win. You know, again, that breaks down not only scheme, but to matchups, predictions, everything you could ever want to find. That's going to be dropping Saturday morning every week at Mass Live. And then, of course, after the game, as you do, Evan, we have our own film form of film breakdown. So, of course, I assume people listening to this podcast are into that. There's more of it, you know, on the site usually Monday and Tuesday before inevitably Wednesday. We come back here in Foxborough and we're on to the next opponent. Yeah. So lots to come.
Yeah, we often have to jump on those conference calls on Monday and Tuesday to get any type of film analysis from the coaches, because once we get here on Wednesdays, Adam knows as well, you know, you're on to the next opponent. But Andrew, thank you very much, and we hope to have you on again soon.
Appreciate it, Evan.
Thanks once again to Andrew Callahan of Mass Live for coming on the show with us. And Adam, we're just going to wrap things up here. What do you have going on at Mass Varsity? Did they cancel the BC game, or is that thing going on right now?
They're actually playing right now, so I'm trying to wear as many hats as possible. but just a boatload of picks for the weekend coming out tomorrow. I'll be covering the Everett-Mansfield game tomorrow night. Everett, obviously, a lot of talent. They've got a kid committed to Virginia Tech named Mike Sanders. Still, is one of the best sort of athletes in the country. And then on Saturday, San Diego is coming to Harvard for Harvard's home opener, and I'll be there that afternoon for that. And you know, as much game stories and recruiting as possible.
Great. How's the Harvard football team these days? I know BC and UMass are kind of getting a lot of national pub, but I haven't heard much about Harvard.
Well, the reason is probably because they went 5-5 last year, which is very un-Harvard. Like, they're usually extremely good. And Yale won the league last year, and Yale is predicted to be, again, the best team in the league. But this Harvard team is quite talented, and they're very motivated after last year. I went to their practice yesterday and talked to some of their players. They have some good talent. They've got a guy named Justice Shelton Mosley, who's a wide receiver and one of the best kick returners in the country and punt returners. And, you know, we'll see how it turns out. You know, San Diego's pretty decent for them, but, you know, we'll see. I think that they'll be in the mix for that Ivy League title.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, Harvard, Yale, that the Harvard people must not be too happy that Yale won the league last year, but see if that turns on its head. But I still say stand by what we said last week about BC. That's a really good football team, and people, you know, should go check that out and go watch them on TV, or, you know, go down to Chestnut Hill and watch the games there. But for me on CLNSmedia.com, I will have my Patriots game plan on Friday, looking at a little bit of a wrinkle that the Patriots offense might be able to throw at the Jags to kind of take advantage of something on their defense. And if you're listening to this on Thursday night, that will be out first thing Friday morning, or you can go back and read it if you listen to it afterwards. And I will be down in Jacksonville, weather permitting, to see that game. So that's very exciting. I wasn't expecting to go to many road games, but I was able to get to this one. So that'll be fun. So I'll be down in Jacksonville and, covering the game from there. And then Adam and I will be back next week on Thursday. on Thursday, excuse me, previewing the Detroit Lions, Adam, with Matt Patricia, old friend.
What is they put on?
Yeah, I'm very, very curious to see what things are like after week two for Matt Patricia in Detroit. Obviously, already rumblings coming out. Mike Garofalo of NFL Network saying that the veteran players are unhappy with Patricia's coaching style. Obviously, that absolute debacle that they had on Monday Night Football kind of backs that up a little bit, that maybe they're not, you know, quite where they want to be. So that game is in Detroit on Sunday Night Football, you know, obviously master versus protege. So that one will be very interesting to see if Detroit, I'm assuming if Detroit is going to play a good game this year, Matt Patricia is going to have his guys ready to go up against his old master there in Bill Belichick.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was fun to see the Jets play that well because you don't always see it. I loved seeing Darnold turn it around after the pick six. But man, if you're a Lions fan, what are you thinking right now? I mean, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah,
this is bad football. So anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get too much into it because we'll have plenty about it next week. But some of it has to fall on Matthew Stafford, right? Like, I'm not making excuses for Patricia or anything like that because he was a Patriots guy. I'm just saying, you know, everybody wants to bury Patricia. It was not a good performance. He's the head coach. All that is very well and fair. But, you know, Matt Stafford, you're a veteran quarterback. I think he threw four interceptions in that game against a defense that's very good, but it's not necessarily there yet. It's not like it was Jacksonville or Minnesota or one of those teams. You know, to throw four picks against that defense on Monday Night Football in the first week of the season, some of that has to go on Jim Bob Cooter, who's been there for a while as Matthew Stafford's offensive coordinator. But he's got a great name, but he's got a quarterback that looks like he's getting worse, not better. So we'll see what happens, but I'm very excited to break that one down. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.